The Place to Be podcast is now a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from multiple major promotions, in addition to outstanding columns and reviews. It is now also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. Visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching for the Place to Be podcast or the History of WWE. The Place to Be is now the History of WWE.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name?
The billiard? Not the billiards, it was... Come on, Rudy. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
And he won't stop.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a very, very special edition of the Place to Be podcast, very special episode. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo, and joining me, I don't get to do this very much, so I'm enjoying it, joining me from his summer home in Cranston, Rhode Island, a man who is notorious for many things, but he won't admit what, my PIC, Justin Rosero. Good evening, sir.
How did this become my summer home? I live here year-round.
Well, I was going to say summer and winter, but that was the...
Oh, all right.
How you doing?
Yeah, and I'm not up to that level yet of you, where I can have multiple homes. But someday, hopefully, the podcast will bring us that type of prosperity as a team. So.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, as I mentioned, it is not often that I open the show, but we are in Studio B tonight because we have a very, very special guest on a very special episode of the Place B podcast. Justin, why don't you get it going?
Hopefully people didn't turn it off when they heard you speaking first, because we have a great episode lined up tonight. And speaking of prosperity, of course, is the man joining us tonight. Unfortunately for him now, the former Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, who just dropped the belt this past Sunday at the Best in the World Internet pay-per-view from Ring of Honor to his good friend Davey Richards, and that is Eddie Edwards. Eddie, thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It hurts a little when you say former, but, you know, I guess I have to deal with it now.
It kills me. Well, you know what's even funnier? Until Monday night's Raw with CM Punk, I think you were the toast of the internet wrestling community world, and now CM Punk has officially stole your thunder, I think.
Yeah, Punk had to go out there and do that, but hey, whatever.
All right, so we're going to let Scott go ahead and kick things off here.
So, obviously, most wrestlers that get into the business, usually, most of them are fans. Tell us about you growing up as a wrestling fan. Who were your favorite guys? When did you start watching? Who were your favorites? Who influenced you? How did you get started liking wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, I think when, you know, growing up is the usual thing where it was just, I can't even tell you, you know, when I started watching it, just all of a sudden, I'm a kid and I'm watching wrestling. And, you know, I liked, you know, all the usual types. I was, you know, Hulkamaniac and liked Warrior and Savage and all those guys, of course. I happened to fall out of wrestling for a while, you know, when I was a younger teen, I guess, you know, I fell out of it, just stopped watching and playing sports and whatnot. And then my little brother actually started watching it constantly. So he sucked me back into it. And at that point, it was something that I realized that I wanted to try to get into and I wanted to do. And at that point, I started, you know, searching professional wrestling schools online and whatnot. And I was lucky enough to come across Killer Kowalski's school, which was in Malden, Mass. At the time, which wasn't too far from me. Went by there, you know, watched classes and talked to him about joining, and pretty much pretty soon after that, I dropped the money and I joined.
So tell us what it was like training under Killer Kowalski. Now, I had a little experience meeting him when I was friends with John Walters when he came to our school to visit, and he seems like a very interesting man even at that age, so I'm sure you have some good Killer Kowalski stories.
Yeah, I mean, he was there. Every time you'd walk in the door, he was the first one there. He's always sitting in his chair, first one there, you know, last guy to leave. And unfortunately, when I joined, you know, he wasn't active in the ring like he was in days of the past, but Wagner Brown at the time was training, and Walter would, you know, watch all the drills that we did and watch everything we did, and every once in a while, you know, yell out, you know, that's bullshit, or that's fake, that looks stupid, or, you know, you always knew he was there, and every once in a while you'd see him get up and make his way over to the ring, and at that point you knew you were in trouble, because he still loved to show that he could squeeze your stomach and make you cry, basically. He took pride in that until I think the day he died. So that was one of the favorite things he did to, you know, new guys coming in. He'd tell them to come over and, you know, flex your stomach the best you can, and then he'd just grab you and twist it until you were down on your knees. So he was still, you know, very involved and very vocal about what was going on at the school, which was always a good thing.
So now, who was one of your favorite, like, fellow trainees during the class that you were in? Any certain ones that stand out you enjoyed working with or felt, like, pushed you to become better?
Well, you know, Wagner being the trainer, he was, you know, was great helping us out and teaching us all the things. And my buddy D.C. Dillinger, one of my good friends who's still working around the New England area. And, you know, guys like, you know, just said, John Walters, he wasn't there all the time at that point, but he was out and about and working. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of guys who joined around the time of me had quit or, you know, just had a different path in life. So, you know, the few guys that stuck around, I'm still pretty close with.
That's cool. So now, coming out of Kilakwasi School, obviously you worked the Northeast Indy Circuit, as most guys coming out of there. You want to tell us about a few of the promotions you worked in and maybe what was one of your favorites or least favorite, you know, memories of that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the major places around at the time was New England Championship Wrestling, run by Sheldon Goldberg, and it's been around for years at this point. And it was one of the top places around to try to get into. And I was lucky enough to get in there, and I was actually tagging with DC at the time. And, you know, we started working there. You know, we just basically got a shot there, and then, but it slowly turned into becoming full-time and working every show. And basically that's the goal you have when you come out of wrestling school. Because, I mean, there was a lot of places running, you know, some not so good and some that were decent. And then, you know, in our eyes, NECW is one of the top places in the area to work. So being able to go in there and, you know, start working and then start making, you know, quote-unquote name for yourself in the, you know, New England area or in the NECW in general, it was a good, you know, good feeling to feel that, you know, the reason you went to training was it was paying off at this point.
Now, obviously, among some of the other promotions, Top Rope, Maryland Championship Wrestling, Millennium Wrestling. Then finally in 2006, you joined Ring of Honor. And your first match, December 22nd, you faced Austin Aries. Talk about how you got hooked up there and what, you know, how you got hired there and when you and how you started.
Yeah, I mean, at that point it was, you know, a here and there type of thing. It was, you know, the shows in Connecticut or the Boston area, I would get a call to go do those shows, but that was about the extent of it at that time. Gabe at the time was booking, and he had contacted me. I believe it was because I had been over to NOAH a few times at that point, and Brian Danielson was over there, and Nigel had been over there. So I think, you know, they had helped me out with putting a word in. So, you know, Gabe gave me the chance, and I would take any chance I had, any booking I could for them, and I would go and have the matches when they were in the area, and then eventually turn into, you know, a full-time thing.
Now, you obviously wrestled singles matches in the beginning, and then you joined the Sweet and Sour Incorporated. I always like that. That's a good faction name. I like that. How was that experience? Was it a good? Did you feel it was a good choice? Did it direct your career the way you wanted it to? Tell us about when you joined that.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it was a great thing because, you know, like I said at the time, it was, you know, here and there bookings for them, and then when I had the opportunity to join up with, you know, Larry Sweeney and Sweet and Sour, it was... It showed me that they had faith in me that, all right, this is going to, you know, give me more bookings and make me more a part of the Ring of Honor roster. So when that happened, I was, you know, I was ecstatic because I knew, you know, it was going to give me a chance to grow further in the company. And it also gave me direction with, you know, my character and what we were what I was actually going to be doing in the company as opposed to just being the guy who comes in here and there. I felt that I had a direction for which way I was going.
And now, of course, coming out of Sweet and Sour Inc., the world's very popular across the world. The American Wolves tag team came out of that faction along with Davey Richards. How did the idea for that team come about?
It actually came about, I think, just because Oh, actually, one time in Japan, me and Davey were both on tour, Noah, and we just started talking about it. And, you know, he was high on the idea. I think he brought it to my attention, and he was pitching it to Gabe at the time. And so I was right on board with it. I thought that, you know, we would have a good chemistry in the ring and also outside of the ring. You know, we knew we got along. And so we thought that in the ring it could, you know, could come across the same way, that we'd have good chemistry. And we actually got a first chance to tag in a match in England with, you know, a lot of the ROH guys. It was a show called Independence Day over there. And, you know, a lot of the ROH guys were over there. And me and Davey had a chance to tag against the Briscoes. And at that point, I think, you know, right when that match finished or even during the match, we could just feel that, you know, something clicked. There was something between us that we would really be able to run with. And we really felt, you know, strongly that we could have a good run as a tag team at that point. And shortly after that, we debuted for Ring of Honor, you know, our tag team. So it was very interesting the way it went, because, you know, you never know when things are going to gel with somebody or when things are going to click. But, you know, right when we got in the ring, we were already feeding off each other. We already knew, you know, where the other one was going to be or what we were going to do. And surprisingly, it continued on. Almost every match we had, it just grew and got better and better and stronger, which is tough to come across, because sometimes things won't click at all, and for it to continuously get better is really something special.
Of course, now the first match of the team in Ring of Honor is All-Star Extravaganza. You also the Briscoe brothers and Claudio Castagnoli and Nigel McGuinness. Any specific memories about that first night, you know, as a team for Ring of Honor against, you know, two teams that are really, you know, looked upon very well by many fans?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just memorable as a fact, because it was our first time in Ring of Honor. It was good to go out there and just be able to, you know, especially get in there with the Briscoes, who were, you know, top tag team Ring of Honor history, and, you know, Nigel and Claudio at the time. And so it was really good to get in there with guys like that and just to feel how the tags, you know, in Ring of Honor, how the matches would flow and how we would have chemistry with certain guys. But, I mean, that match was, you know, far from what we could, I think, what we eventually put out there. But it was good to get out there and just, you know, break the ice, so to speak.
Right, and then eventually you guys did capture the Ring of Honor tag team titles. Now, that obviously being your first major championship, you know, we here look at Ring of Honor being a major promotion as far as title goes. So what was that personally like and as a team, like, you know, finally seeing your hard work, you know, where you had started with Killer Kowalski, coming up through the indies and now capturing a major championship? What was that like on both levels, as for yourself and then along with Davey as well?
Yeah, I mean, for myself, it was, you know, basically a combination of, you know, like you said, training and working all these places and finally breaking through. It felt like at that point, it was like, all right, now, you know, I finally belong. I finally have made a mark for, you know, myself. And then with Davey, you know, it was just a great accomplishment because, you know, it was something that we formulated and that we went out there and we felt we were, you know, putting on these good matches, and we had a great feud going on with Steen and Generico at the time, and to be able to go out there and it was on a, you know, television tape and the table match, and go out there and have a good match and win those belts, it was a great sense of accomplishment for me and Davey.
Then on in 2009, as you guys were on a great roll, on September 25th, in an Anything Goes match against Kevin Steen, you broke your elbow. Just hearing that sounds painful.
Yeah.
What happened? What happened? What was the specific move? You know, what went down where that happened? And as you were rehabbing, or did it affect your style in any way? Did you change the way you wrestled in any way from it? What happened there?
It was actually in Boston, the match, and I went to do a tope onto Kevin, and he threw a chair at me and moved, and when I hit the ground, I basically hit it with my elbow straight down, and basically the point of my elbow just broke away from the rest of my arm, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah, so when it happened, you know, I didn't know what happened. I thought I dislocated it, so I kept trying to pop it back in, but unfortunately with a broken bone, you can't exactly pop it back in, so I'm trying to move it and try to get it to pop, but nothing's going on, so I knew, you know, something was up. After the match finished, you know, started swelling up right away, and, you know, I had to go to the hospital and get it checked out, and, you know, they told me it was broken, whatnot, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, after the surgery and, you know, everything that, getting it fixed and getting the plate in there with the screws, it didn't affect my style, or even the way I think, because I think you can't go into it that way, you know. You can't go out, you know, worry about injuring yourself or anything, because that's when injuries happen, is when you're overly cautious about doing something. So I mean, as soon as I could, I got back in the ring and started working, and luckily, you know, no further damage was done. But you know, it's hard to change the way you work, because you know, you work for so long, and it's hard to just say, oh, I'm not going to do this or that, because then you don't want to, you know, rip off the fans or yourself even. So you just go out there and do what you can.
Now, according to our info, you actually wrestled the next night, which is amazing. I applaud you for that. In a ladder war against Steen and Generico, and you retained your championships. You underwent the surgery. Then, obviously, at Final Battle on December 19th, you lost the titles to the Briscoes.
Yeah.
On your return from the injury, you joined the TV title tournament. Obviously, this was a brand new title that was being created in Ring of Honor. The Pure title had gone, and the World mm-hmm. Television Championship had replaced it. You defeated three pretty impressive guys, Cole Cabana, Kevin Steen, and then your partner, Davey Richards, and became the inaugural champion. Tell us about your run as TV champion, how it went, and obviously you eventually did lose a title to a pretty capable guy in Christopher Daniels. Tell us about your run as TV champion.
After winning the title when it's first debut, or you know, becoming the first champion is, you know, always something that's pretty special, because in the history books there can only be, you know, one number one, and luckily for me it was me. But it felt good right now, you know, it was a sense of accomplishment again, because you know, winning the tag belts was awesome, of course. It was the first title that I won in ROH, and then being able to break away and win a singles title was another step in my career, because then I was showing, you know, going out there and trying to show people what I can do in singles matches, and show that, you know, I can hold my own. And Davey, of course, everybody knows that he can hold his own, so he's out doing his thing, I'm doing my thing. And, you know, I felt I had some strong matches as TV champion, and I think it really culminated in the end with Christopher Daniels. You know, I think by far that was my best matches as TV champion, and then even when he won the belt, we had another match for the TV title, and I think me and Chris had good chemistry and some real hard-hitting, you know, great fought matches.
And the good news is for you, when you won the newly created TV title, it was actually footage, and it was real, unlike Pat Patterson when he won the Intercontinental title for the first time. It was
exactly
made up tournament.
I got proof.
Yeah, so in September 2010, you signed your new contract with the Ring of Honor. Did you ever consider leaving at that time and moving on? Was it an easy negotiation? You know, was it an easy decision for you to stay after your success there?
No, it was very easy. It was, you know, very informal negotiation. I'd say, you know, it was just, yep, I want to keep doing this. And, you know, I still do, obviously, and I believed at the time in what Ring of Honor was and the product that we brought out there and what we were putting out there, and I believe in all the guys in the locker room. So it wasn't a hard decision to say, I want to stay here and help bring Ring of Honor into the next level.
Then, obviously, after a great run as the television champion, and again, losing to a pretty capable guy in Christopher Daniels, the moment of truth came for you in March 19th of this past year at Manhattan Mayhem 4. You defeated Roderick Strong, another very capable and well-known wrestler, to become the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, which is an incredible accomplishment. I mean, the guys who have held that belt, Samoa Joe and CM Punk, I mean, was it expected? How was it talked about? Tell us how the winning the title came about to that point.
It was just kind of put out there, you know, maybe not last minute, but it definitely wasn't the plan that had been in the works for, you know, forever and ever. It just kind of came about, and you know, when I found out what was going on, I was, you know, very happy and very. I was actually, you know, surprised and shocked that, you know, I'd have a chance to do, you know, what they felt I was capable of. And then going out there with the match with Roddy, just that I just remember when I pinned, you know, I rolled them up, I got the pin, and just the. Almost a sense of amazement in the crowd was just, you know, it was electric. I just remember the building, you know, like the ring was like shaking. It was just a crazy, crazy feeling, and it was an awesome feeling. I mean, you know, you talk about goosebumps. That was sincerely, you know, greatly one of the nights that, you know, when you love wrestling, when you love being a wrestler, just because of the reaction that it got. You know, it caught a lot of people off guard, which is, you know, always a good thing, you know, the surprise. And I think it went very well, and I think it got people talking, which is always a great thing.
And this is it's an honor for you, because of all the great guys that have ever gone through that promotion, you are the first person to ever actually win the Triple Crown, World Tag Team titles, the World Television title, and the World Heavyweight Championship. Even in the years when when the Pure title was there instead of the TV title, no one had ever won all three.
And also, Scott, not to step on you, but in a promotion too, where they really make sure that the winning and the championship, you know, truly matters.
Yes.
You know, in the other two promotions, WWE and TNA, it seems a lot of times the belt is either a reward for longevity being there, or just used mainly as a prop to be traded back week to week. And Ring of Honor really books their champions, you know, to mean something. So I think to win a Triple Crown at a promotion like that on the level that you did makes it even more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's another first that, you know, nobody can take away, and to take a step back and, like, look, you know, at what, you know, I've been able to do in Ring of Honor and what they've, you know, given me the opportunity to do is just, you know, it's a great honor, you know, no pun intended, but it really is, you know, tag team champion, TV champion, world champion, you know, Triple Crown champion. It's just to take a step back and just look at it, you know, I'm just really privileged to have a chance to do what I've done.
Did the reign go, again, March 19th until this past Sunday, did it go as you expected it to? Did you feel you had your best matches? Tell us about the reign itself and how you feel it went for you.
I actually, you know, I really enjoyed the matches that I had, and I felt, you know, that, you know, being the Ring of Honor champion, it's, you know, there's a lot of pressure on it. You know, Ring of Honor, I think, as a whole, the guys, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves because we believe in the product and we know what, you know, we can go out there and do. So we have this sense of pressure that we always feel about going on and putting on the greatest show of all time, because that's basically what the goal is every time you go out there, to make this the best show ever. And, you know, being in the main events on such, you know, cards that are so stacked, there's a lot of pressure. But I felt when I went out there and did it, you know, my first title defense was against Christopher Daniels, who, you know, I'd had numerous matches with. So we went out there, and I felt that we had a good, solid match. I defended against Chris Hero in Canada, and I felt that, you know, that was another, you know, another solid one. And then against Roderick, and I think they all went really well. I didn't lose any supporters through those matches. And I felt, if anything, you know, I showed what I was capable of, and hopefully in the future, you know, at some point I get the chance to show it again.
Now, of course, this past Sunday, like we mentioned, you dropped the title to a good friend and former partner, Davey Richards. Was it bittersweet dropping it to such a close friend? You know, in the end, you know, obviously sad that your reign's coming to an end, but did it make it a little bit better that your, you know, close friend was taking the belt from you?
Yeah, and you know, I know how much it meant to Davey, and it was just, you know, I felt it was a, you know, really, really solid match, and, you know, we went out there and we beat the hell out of each other. We, you know, we knew what we both were capable of, and we knew when we went into the ring against each other, you know, against anybody, but, you know, especially against each other, we're going to go out there and we're going to just leave it all in the ring and just leave everything we have out there. And we knew we were going to beat the hell out of each other, just because that's, you know, the type of guys we are. We knew it, you know, we do the same thing when tag matches. So when we were out there, you know, it felt like something special. And when Davey won, you know, it was like, you know, he's the better man tonight. And I'm more than, you know, I'm just happy for Davey. He was happy for me when I won, and, you know, and of course I'm happy for Davey that he won. Am I happy to lose it? Of course not. But am I happy that Davey won it? Yes. You know, he's one of my best friends, and he really is like a brother. So when that happens, it was a really unique experience, you know, and I think for the fans there and the fans watching, it felt like something unique.
And for any fans that haven't, you know, seen the build-up to this match, I went back and rewatched it the other night when we were kind of preparing for this, and the video is on your website, and the packaging that they put together for this match was unbelievable. I mean, I was getting, you know, pumped up again for the match just watching that video, kind of going through your friendship with Davey and where you've come and how things built to where you're at going into Sunday. So I implore anyone to go to Eddie's website, and we'll get into that in a little bit, and definitely check that out. And of course, a lot of critics and fans are universally praising that match, you know, match of the year type stuff. Do you feel that that is your best match to date?
I think there's always things that can be improved upon. I guess it's in the fans' eyes. You know, it's not really. I felt that we went out there and had a great match, and, you know, I felt like we were flowing and everything was just going, you know, full throttle. And I think, you know, considering the atmosphere that it was in, it's definitely up there as probably my top match ever.
All right. Well, we have some. It is time for the lightning round. And what we're going to do, Eddie, is just fire off some questions at you and give us, you know, whatever pops into your head. There's no limitations here, no restrictions. Whatever comes into your head, say it. We have no filters here, trust us. Actually, the less filters, the better with our listeners.
I feel like I'm getting baited into something.
No, not at all. We're not working for anybody. That's okay.
It's real.
No. Obviously, being in Ring of Honor is a huge cred to many wrestling fans, particularly those that stay there for a long time. And obviously, based on CM Punk's promo on Monday night, I think Ring of Honor got even more credibility compared to others. But if one of the big two came calling, either WWE or TNA, would you go? Or are you content right now in Ring of Honor?
At this time, I couldn't be happier with Ring of Honor. Just, you know, everything that's recently happened. The show that just happened, first of all, I thought, you know, was one of, if not, you know, the best show that we've had in, you know, ever in a long time, you know, whatever you say. But it was, you know, one of the best shows that you can ever see live. And everything that's been going on with the Sinclair Broadcasting Group that just purchased Ring of Honor, you know, we were at their TV studio and at their office building this past weekend before the show, and it was just, you could feel that, you know, there's something special going on, and this is really an opportunity for Ring of Honor to take that next step and show everybody what type of product Ring of Honor is and what type of wrestling, you know, we go out there and represent. And I think it's just a matter of time before we go out there and, you know, are able to show more people. So I'm very happy about, you know, where Ring of Honor is at this point and me being a part of it.
Based on your knowledge of the industry, do you have any take on the steroid and wellness policies within either major promotion or just the business in general? Do you have any kind of views or takes on that?
I don't really have an opinion on it. You know, I'm not anybody's mother or father. They can do whatever they want, and whether or not, you know, businesses take care of it, you know, that's their decision. I don't really care.
Okay.
I'm a pretty easygoing fellow. So they can do what they want. You know.
Exactly. That's, I think, the opinion that a lot of people should take. What is your take on the general state of the business? Not within within specific promotions, but just in general. Do you follow either promotion? Do you get a chance to catch, you know, an Impact or a Raw or a SmackDown when you have some free time? Obviously, your schedule is probably crazy, but do you follow any of the other promotions? And if so, who are some of the guys you like watching?
I don't actually get to watch as much as, you know, some people do, I guess. And I try to catch it, you know, more so when guys who I'm familiar with or guys that I'm friendly with or, you know, Daniel Bryan or, you know, Punk or Nigel when he was on a TNA or, you know, the Young Bucks. I just try to, you know, I try to watch when I'm able to and see what's going on with those guys. But I don't really get to, I haven't watched, you know, a whole episode of either show. But, I mean, there's guys that are, you know, unbelievable workers in both companies, and there's young guys that are great. So, I mean, wrestling in general, I believe, is okay. You know, I'm sure, you know, wrestling goes up and down along with the economy. The economy, you know, it's a tough time for everybody. So, you know, wrestling is going to feel the effect no matter what company you're in. So, in general, wrestling, I believe, is great. You know, whether or not it shows by, you know, ticket sales or whatnot, you know, you just take into account that it's a tough time for everybody.
Now, right now, CM Punk, obviously, probably CM Punk, Samoa Joe, probably the one guys in each promotion that are the poster children for Ring of Honor alumni. Have you ever had a chance to meet either of them or work with either of them in your time? Or at least,
yeah, I actually had a chance to work with Samoa Joe in a company in upstate New York called 2CW, which puts on some great shows up in that area. It was a few years back, and, you know, it was I don't know if it was the first time meeting him, but, you know, I wasn't in Ring of Honor at the time with Joe or Punk, so being able to work with Joe was a great opportunity, and had a great time wrestling him and going out there and, you know, trying to see what I could do against a guy like that who's so accomplished. And I've been able to, you know, meet Punk a few times. He was at the Atlanta shows during WrestleMania weekend. He stopped by the Ring of Honor shows to say hi to guys, and I haven't had a chance to work with him, hopefully one day, but, you know, it was a great pleasure meeting those guys.
All right, now, we have to ask, speaking of Punk, obviously you saw the promo, I'm sure, for Monday night. What's your take on that style of promo? Do you feel like it works? Do you feel like it kind of exposes things a little bit too much? Do you think it only aims at too small of a portion of the fan base, or did you enjoy, you know, obviously the delivery and the material was great, but yeah. How do you think it kind of has the effect on the business?
I didn't see the exact promo, but, you know, I've obviously read things, and everybody's told me about it, of course. And you know, you asking me the question right now, and I'm sure, you know, wrestling fans are talking to other wrestling fans about it, and everybody's talking about it. And I think, how can you say it didn't work when, mm-hmm. you know, has the wrestling world on edge right now? You know, people might say that it's trying to appeal to a niche of a crowd, but, you know, the fans in WWE, they see this guy who wants to, you know, leave the company and take the belt. From what I'm gathering, he said he's going to leave the company with the belt. And how does that not, you know, appeal to everybody? All of those fans are going to not want him to do that, whether or not he talks about Ring of Honor or not. You know, he's still going out there and doing a wrestling promo. You know, it's just like in sports, you know, in real life sports, you know, a guy talks about how he's going to let his contract run out, or he's trying to get out of his contract to go to another team. I know if somebody does it here in Boston, I will pretty much hate the guy forever. So, you know, I think it relates to everybody, and I think that's the great thing about, you know, what Punk is able to do. He's always been such a great promo guy, and to go out there and do that and get everybody talking, it just shows what he's capable of.
Now, I'm definitely on board with you, because I think the beauty of Punk's promo was that it works within the world of wrestling, you know, within the storyline that they're doing. It's not just a shoot, whatever, you know, promo just to shock people. It was well told, because, you know, he attacked his opponent, and then, he, like you said, he's saying he's going to go to these other promotions and take their world title with him, you know, complaining about not being pushed or promoted. And, you know, I thought, and he didn't say push, like, he didn't make it like it was politics. He made it like he was just being overlooked, even though he felt he was the best in the world. So I liked that it played. It wasn't just shock for the sake of shock. It actually fit, you know, within the storyline and his character.
Exactly.
So, okay.
And you never know. You could actually, he may show up in Ring of Honor. You may actually beat him. So you can.
That might be my chance to wrestle him. There we go.
Hopefully. So obviously you have an unreal resume of opponents to your credit. What opponent do you consider to be your favorite that you've worked with?
Oh, man. That's real tough. I mean, just looking at, you know, the guys in Ring of Honor that I've wrestled, it's hard to say that one guy is, you know, I enjoy wrestling better than the other, because there's, you know, the talent level is just, you know, out of this world. So you go out there and, you know, any day of the week, you can go out there and be in the main event with anybody on the roster. So, I mean, that just speaks to the level of talent. I know it's not what you want to hear, but, you know, I say I really, of course, enjoyed wrestling Davey just because of our history and, you know, because of what we're able to do when we're out there. Roderick Strong, you know, another guy that I really like going out there. And Christopher Daniels, I think I had a good series of matches with him, and I really enjoyed doing. And then there's also, you know, the guys in Japan, like working a Kenta or a Marufuji. And, you know, I was lucky enough to work with Misawa before he passed, and Kenta Kobashi a few times. So, it's hard to pick just one guy. There's a group of guys, and I think they all fall into that group.
What was your time like in Japan? We've just kind of browsed on it, and I believe one of our listener questions involves this too. But you mentioned Kenta Kobashi, who's a guy that I've enjoyed watching his matches. Mm-hmm. What was your time? You said you were in Noah. What was that like? How did that come about that you went over there?
Well, I got the chance through a friend to go over there and basically live in the dojo and train, you know, Japanese, what they call young boy style. You know, you go over there and you live there and you train every day and you, you know, help set things up and do this and that. And I was more than happy to do that. And I went over there for, it was 3 months. Then I came back home for maybe a couple of weeks. I went back for, you know, 2 more months. So basically 5 months of just training and living the pro wrestling style in Japan. It was a great, you know, a great privilege, and I'm forever grateful of being able to do that. And it taught me, you know, a lot about, you know, the respect factor of those guys over there and how, you know, the guys who have come before you, how they are treated over there. And it just, you know, it's amazing the amount of respect that they, you know, they demand, basically. And the style, I love, you know, the Japanese wrestling style, and I think, you know, Ring of Honor has incorporated that, and, you know, certain guys take to it a lot more. But being able to go over there and wrestle was always one of my dreams to be able to do. And being able to go there and train was even, you know, more of a dream to say that I've done that and that I was able to do that. So, you know, it's been nothing but the best over there. And I still, every time I go over there, it's always a privilege. It's always a great time over there.
What was it like getting to work with Misawa? That's one of the questions from our readers, our listeners, just jumping ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, these guys are, you know, pro wrestle heroes over there. You know, they're just, they're heroes in general. And then, you know, in the wrestling community, they were just like, they're basically gods. You know, you go over there and to be able to go in the ring with those legends is just, you know, it's a surreal feeling, and it's a great honor to get in there and get forearmed by Misawa.
Now, you worked with a lot of different guys throughout your career in the promotions in New England, of course, in Ring of Honor. Anybody specifically easy to work with backstage in terms of getting to know them, working a match out? Anybody easy to deal with? Anybody difficult to deal with when it comes to working a match?
I'm trying to. I think somebody being difficult would stick out more, but I've never had one of those moments where it's like, you know, we get into a throwdown in the back or something like that. Luckily, you know, like, I've been pretty lucky with the guys that, you know, I've been in the locker rooms with, and I've never had any issues as far as putting things together or just getting to know somebody in general. I've been fairly lucky with everybody that I've been around, so I can't think of anybody that's been difficult or given any problems to me. And so I guess that would mean everybody's been relatively nice and easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So taking yourself out of the equation, obviously, who do you think is the best wrestler in the world today?
Well, I guess it would be Davey Richards right now. He is the man holding the Ring of Honor world title, and I believe that is the most important. You know, like you said, it's a championship that is earned and respected due to the fact that Ring of Honor recognizes what a championship means, so I think it's fair to say that he's the best right now because he's holding the most prestigious belt in America.
On a side note, before our next question, I just want everyone to know, in case you don't, and I don't even know, Eddie, if you even know this, you probably do, so I'm sure someone told you, talking about best in the world, last year's PWI 500, the Pro Wrestling Illustrated 500, of course, they do it every year for the top 500 wrestlers in the world. The 2010 list, Eddie, I don't know if you know this or not, do you know what number you were last year?
Last year?
Off the top of your head?
I do not know.
37.
37.
That's pretty damn impressive.
Okay. 37 out of 500. Yeah,
37 out of 500. That's pretty damn good, let me tell you right now.
Well, this also comes to the publication that had like Lex Luger number one like in 1997.
Hey, don't steal my thunder. What is that?
No, I'm saying you should be higher. I'm saying they don't have enough respect.
Yeah, well, you should be like two. you should be number one.
then preach, brother, preach.
Yeah. Well, there was that one year they had like Dean Malenko number one who like shocked everyone that they actually put him.
Yeah, exactly. And also the Wrestling Observer News, I also want to point this out, more accolades for Eddie. The American Wolves were the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, otherwise as Dave Meltzer's Tag Team of the Year in 2009. So another well-deserved accolade.
Thanks.
Speaking of other guys that have legendary creds, what was it like working with Jim Cornette? Obviously one of the most well-known guys in the business, manager, as a promoter. What was it like working with him?
I mean, luckily we still get to work with him, you know, every Ring of Honor show. It's, you know, you look at what he's done, what he's accomplished, and the guys that he's been around in the companies that he's been in. it was great news when we heard that, you know, he was coming in to help us out. And basically every time he's around, he can't do anything but help. You know what I mean? Like, you just pick his brain, and it's something that, you know, you don't take for granted, because to have a guy like, it's hard to get guys like that to want to help, you know, a new, a younger company out, or younger guys out. And he takes such pride in it that you can't help but feel the energy from him, and it just translates to everything that he does and everything that Ring of Honor does, because he's so willing and just wants everybody in Ring of Honor to succeed, and the product to succeed, and to just keep gaining popularity, and just gaining viewers, and just gaining momentum. And he takes such pride in that. It's an awesome thing, you know, because you never know how, you know, how guys are going to be who have accomplished all these things they've done. You know, they can sit home and just do whatever, but he willingly came in and just wanted to help, and it's an awesome thing.
And he still got it. Like I said, I was watching that build-up package for your match, and he played a big role kind of setting the stage for your match, and he, you know, he's definitely still got his gift of really being able to make things feel legitimate and realistic, and being able to kind of draw interest into a match.
Yeah, completely, and he's still got the gift for gab. I mean, he can promo like nobody's business. It's really unbelievable when he just goes into it, and so it's just awesome to be around.
It just amazes me that a guy like him, you know, was just washed away from the major promotion so easily. I know his reputation may be a little difficult to deal with, but since, you know, a guy like him that has so much knowledge and so much ability to not be used, you know, I mean, lucky for you, obviously, and Ring of Honor to be able to benefit from this, but I just can't imagine how this guy just gets treated the way he has in the past, you know, from different companies.
Yeah, but hey, another company's loss is our company's gain, so I'll gladly handle that.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about the change in power structure. Now, I know some issues with Gabe, and then I also had a question, what it was like to work with Dave Lagana. I know I'm actually a big fan of his podcast and what he does, like, on the internet for wrestling, and trying to podcast he has with the former creative members, and he's always someone that's kind of interested me. You know, what's it like working with him, you know, someone who was in WWE for as long as he was, now coming down to Ring of Honor to help you guys out, you know, work there, and I think he works for NWA out in California, too. Can you tell us a little bit about him and a little bit about how the power structure changed in Ring of Honor over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing to have Lagana around because, you know, because of, like you said, the experience that he has had and coming to help us, you know, help out Ring of Honor and just give his opinions and his views and help us ease into, you know, because Ring of Honor obviously was not always a company that was on TV until the HDNet thing came up, and Dave helped out with that, and he's continuing to help out with the Sinclair stuff. So he helps, you know, ease us into it and helps us with, you know, what we should be doing or what his opinions are. And it's always good to have guys who have been there, done that, who can help you out and say, this might be better, or this could be better, or do this, try this, or this is where you need to be, this is what you need to say. You know, so it always helps out to have other people's opinions, and guys who have been successful at what they've done, you know what they're saying is the right thing because they've been there and they've done that. As far as, you know, I guess power struggle is how you said it, or the power, I'm not struggle,
it's
power.
It's kind of like the structure. Power is not the right word. I know it wasn't like a struggle between guys, but it's kind of the change in hierarchy, I guess, is like.
Yeah, well, you know, when I first started, it was Gabe at the time, and then switched over to Adam Pearce, who was, you know, I love Pearce. He's a great guy, and I thought he was a great booker at the time, and there was a little bit of, you know, there's always a sense of uncertainty or uneasiness because you don't know how things are going to go or how certain guys are going to react or what's going to happen when things change. And when Pearce came in, I think he really took to it and guys really responded, and I really enjoyed his time there. You know, unfortunately, things are going to change, and then Delirious took over, and it was the same thing almost. You know, you don't know how things are going to go. You don't know how people are going to react. You don't know what the product's going to do or so on and so forth. But, I mean, he has really, really stepped up, you know, stepped up his game and stepped up, I think, forced everybody else to step up their game because Ring of Honor, I think, has been on an incredible roll lately. It's just the matches and the full cards and the energy in the locker room is just, I think, between the crew and, you know, the wrestlers and the guys in charge, between the TV guys, between the camera guys, the ring crew, everybody, I think, is just something, you know, is in the air. You know, it's really clicking at this time, and hopefully it doesn't come to a halt anytime soon, because it's just, you know, onward and upward at this point.
Now, before we get to our listener questions.
You were talking about Gabe, and I just wanted to ask this, and I'm not saying for better or for worse, but Gabe obviously was the name that was connected to the company for so long, and now obviously he is gone. But were there differences? Does the company feel different, not better or worse, just different from when he was there to now not being there?
Yeah, it's obviously going to feel different. You know, it's a different style. It's a different crew, so it's just going to be a different feeling in general. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a different product. You know, different guys in charge is going to be a different product. And there's also, you have to take into account that there's different wrestlers now. You know, there's different this and that. So it's all going to come into effect, and things are going to obviously be different than when one guy was in charge to another.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So before we get to our listener questions, I do have probably the most important question of this whole podcast. One-on-one, you and John Walters, who's winning that match?
Oh, of course me.
Right, no doubt about it, right?
Because he's too miserable.
That was my next question. He said he had a direct question for me to ask you. Are you miserable? That was the question he wanted to ask.
Nowhere near as miserable as him, so that's all that matters.
Are you going to see any of his work out in the Lucha Libre USA?
I haven't been able to watch it. I mean, I've only heard good things. And, you know, knowing John, I know it's obviously great, so...
Well, the good thing
I'm going to check it out, though.
The good thing is he's an asshole in real life. So now he's finally playing that.
Exactly.
On TV,
I'm sure it comes across on screen greatly because he's just putting his persona out there. He probably has to turn it down a notch in wrestling. Usually they say you have to turn it up and that's the character you're going to be. But no, he has to turn it down because he's just too much of an asshole.
I got so much stuff of him from our TV production classes that I can't wait till he really strikes it big so I can start making some money.
I think it was going to school with you that did it to him. So.
All right, Scott, let's get into some of our listener questions
Yes.
here. Why don't you start it up?
Yes, Eddie, we have a lot of questions from our fine Place to Be Podcast Nation fans. First one, this listener asks, Eddie, what do you think the future of Ring of Honor can be? A lot of us know the product is better than what TNA and WWE can give us. This is word for word the question. But the mainstream coverage is just not there. Why is that after 8 years?
I mean, we just never had the outlet, basically. And with the Sinclair Broadcasting Group purchasing us, I think this is the chance. You know, it's not a national television show, but it's going to be in a lot of areas. And if anything, it's going to lead to more exposure. Basically, the exposure we're going to get as of right now is fantastic. You know, it's going to really give us a chance to grow in the markets that the show airs. And we're obviously going to keep our demographic that we have now in the shows that we run now, you know, Chicago, New York, Toronto, all those, you know, great areas that we have, you know, great crowds. So we're going to just be building on that. And hopefully when we're able to put out the product that we have and to these markets that we have the TV show, it's just going to grow to more exposure and give us a chance to go to other markets and show that product in that area and so on and so forth. And I think this is really the absolute best opportunity we have had. And it's an exciting time for everybody. And I think the fans should be excited too.
Do you think on a side note, a question I wanted to ask, and one of the things that I think really is one of Ring of Honor's best assets is their DVD collection and their collection of matches that people can watch. Do you think that maybe the next step would be for Ring of Honor to maybe hook up with a major a store chain, a Walmart or a Target, that maybe can expand the sales of the Ring of Honor DVDs, because I think that's something that definitely would be very, very helpful for you and for a lot of these guys that are working so hard, and you talked about getting an outlet. Do you think that's something that maybe Sinclair would think about for the future?
Yeah, I think if, you know, when the show is airing for a while, if, you know, it's getting a good response, I think it would be, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to put them in those areas. As far as, you know, across the nation or whatever, putting them in, you know, stores in an area that the TV show isn't running or that Ring of Honor doesn't go to, I don't think, you know, that probably won't help. But if we're able to do it in the markets that where the Ring of Honor product is shown, I think that could help definitely, because they'll be familiar with it and they'll want to see more, hopefully, you know. So I think that could be something that we could do.
Well, definitely, I live in Connecticut. Justin lives in Rhode Island. So that definitely would help us in this part of the country because Ring of Honor is all over this area. They've done shows in all of our states around here. I actually went, Justin and I went to a show a few years ago. I think it was 2000, right before you joined. I think it was 2005, and when the crowd was crazy. So definitely, I think a merchandising deal in this area would be a huge benefit to you, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get a tape.
Yeah. it's all about the, you know, the advertising. If we get the word out there and get enough people to know about it, I think it would definitely help. Mm.
Now, this next question, we kind of we talked about a little bit earlier after you had broken your elbow. You were in that ladder match, the ladder war against Steen and Generico. Do you this listener asks if you consider it the most important match of your career and how much pain you were in during it.
Looking at it, it turned out to be a very important match in my career because of the fact that the fans in New York, they knew what I was, you know, what I was going through, and they knew what had happened the night before, and they couldn't help but notice my arm just wrapped up, and I couldn't move it, so they had no choice but to take notice. So going out there and wrestling on that show, the fans really took to me, and they really, you know, that's the difference between, you know, the Ring of Honor fans. They just respected the fact that I was going out there and doing this, you know, not only for myself, but, you know, for the rest of the company and for the fans. So to go out there with a broken arm and do that, it really almost, not opened their eyes, but kind of turned them on to me where, you know, it was really like a stepping stone in my career. Because after that match, you know, the fans almost started cheering me. Even though we were, you know, quote-unquote bad guys at the time, we went out there and the fans respected it and they applauded what, you know, I was doing and what me and Davey were doing. So it turned out to be a very important thing as it helped me as a wrestler and just as a character and everything. It just helped me grow. As far as the pain, it was pretty painful, but I had it wrapped up and taped up and everything, so I couldn't really move it, which was a good thing because, you know, it hurt when I moved it. So if I didn't bend it or anything, it wasn't too bad until, you know, hitting the mat or getting hit with a ladder. That, you know, that's always going to hurt. So, but luckily, you know, no further damage was done that night. So I made it through, and that was the most important part.
We talked earlier about when you were with Sweet and Sour Inc. and with Larry Sweeney, and one of our listeners wants you to expound on what it was like being managed by him, what you think it did for your career, and did you know him well outside of the ring?
Yeah, I mean, when I first got the chance to join up with Sweet and Sour, I didn't really know Larry at the time. But, you know, after he started managing me and I was part of his, you know, stable, it was an awesome thing because he was such a great, you know, he's a great person outside of the ring and outside of the, you know, in the locker room. I mean, just a great guy overall. And but his character in the ring and around the ring was just, you know, it was awesome. It was like almost like a throwback to the, you know, days of old. He was just out of this world type of character where he just demanded this attention and he had this, you know, he had this swagger about him. And it was just really cool to be a part of something like that with him, especially at the time when, you know, when I joined, I was still new in the company and I finally had some direction. And it was good to be a part of such a major group and a major faction and be managed by such somebody that's on top of the game like that. It was a great opportunity for me.
How do you like wrestling on the West Coast with PWG, and do you plan on going back to that area more often?
I had a great time at PWG. I've been out there a few times now, and every show is just, those fans are great. They're just, you know, off the charts. And I hope I'll be back there sometime soon, you know, sooner than later. It's been, every time I've been out there, it's been nothing but the best. So I really, and of course, I love the nice weather, so that helps.
Another person is asking what the transition was like going from one of the top guys in the promotion to the top guy in the promotion. Did the pressure build? Did you feel any different going from one of the big guys to the big guy?
Yeah, I think I mentioned before that just it really, you know, that pressure just comes with that championship and with that term, you know, top guy or one of the top, you know, top guys in there. And the pressure definitely came with it, but it's, you know, pressure is deserved, you know what I mean? It's something that you earn, so if you don't want that pressure, don't go out there and try to do what you can do or don't try to get into that position. because I think everybody knows that, you know, if you're the one carrying that belt of such a prestigious company, you know that the pressure's with it. So, you know, I knew that that was something that was going to come with it, and it definitely was, but it was welcomed. And I think it's welcomed by all of our guys. So, pressure is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. I mean, it drives you. It drives me. You know, it drives all the guys to go out there and just perform at the top level, you know, the best level that we can.
All right, next one's kind of a two-parter in two different directions. The first part is, do you think Tyler Black will be able to make it in WWE? And the second part is it difficult to perform your diehard finisher?
Tyler, there's no reason for him not to succeed. You know, he was such an unbelievable, he is such an unbelievable talent, a great guy outside of the ring, you know, a great wrestler in the ring. And you look at what he accomplished in Ring of Honor in such a short time. I mean, there is no way that he, if given the chance, there's no way he won't succeed because of the talent that he is. You know, he's something fresh and something new, he's just a great wrestler altogether, so he has to succeed. If given the right opportunity, he will. As far as the diehard finisher, if the guy's beat up enough, it's not hard. But if he's fighting it and hard to grab, yeah, it'll be hard. But you know, as long as I can get him, you know, it's all right.
Just changing my page here. If you could bring anybody in, one person asks, if you could bring any talent into Ring of Honor to wrestle that's not there now, who would you choose?
Anybody, I guess that's anybody anywhere to...
Yeah, anybody anywhere.
To just have a match with, is that the...
Let's say to work. Let's say one match and then to work a program with, so two different guys.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it would be cool to have, you know, like maybe a guy from Japan to come in, like a Kento or a Marufuji, I think would be it'd be a good thing for Ring of Honor in general, and I think it'd be a fun program to have and to have some different types of matches. I think that'd be a really, really cool opportunity.
All right.
Okay.
Next question, and this one's this guy doesn't hold back. How sick do you feel knowing that, even though you're one of the best professional wrestlers in the world, there are more people who know Hornswoggle and Santino Marella and associate them with professional wrestling greatness than you?
Well, how sick do I feel right now?
He was very verbose.
I don't feel very sick. I'm not quite John Walters' level right now, but you know what? I'm not gonna be the guy who complains about other guys getting shots or other guys being, you know, being popular or getting paid to do this and that. Like, that's not, I don't, whatever. They were there. What are they gonna do? Say no? You know, like, whatever. WWE has a huge audience. What do I, you know, am I to expect anything different? No, that's fine with me. I'm not gonna, you know, complain about, you know, sour grapes or whatever the saying is. I don't care. At some point, Ring of Honor will, you know, hopefully be into the mainstream, and real wrestling fans will see what real wrestling is.
Good way to put it. I agree.
Yes,
I agree. Now, what is your favorite match that you've been a part of? And I know we've talked about many of them tonight. And your favorite match of all time in your career?
My favorite match of me? Is that...
Yeah, your favorite match.
The whole question?
Yeah, that was the question. What favorite match that you've been a part of?
Both. I think it was what was your, like, the one you were in, and then what's your favorite match of all time, just in general?
Yeah, in general.
Okay. I'd say this past weekend was one of my favorite bittersweet matches, you know, against Davey. I feel that was a real good match. I also enjoyed my GHC Junior title match against Kotaro Suzuki in Japan, which was in January of this year. Another match that, you know, that just a match that I really enjoyed and went out there. And, you know, we had the chance to work at Cork and Hall, and that's always a great opportunity. Those are the first two that just popped in my head. Maybe because they're recent, but, you know, I'll stick with those. As far as favorite matches, you know, there's always the Iron Man match between Bret and Michaels, which is amazing to, you know, anybody who watches wrestling. Another one that I feel is great was Kenta Kobashi versus Jun Akiyama from Tokyo Dome in 04, which it was just a really crazy match, and I think really had the Japanese pro wrestling taste to it and just summed up everything and showed why those guys are, you know, the legends that they are. So I'll stick with 2-2. So there you go.
Okay.
All right, and kind of playing off of that, who would be your dream opponent, maybe someone from the past that you wouldn't be able to bring into Ring of Honor, someone working currently right now? Is there anyone, you know, say maybe the last 30, 20 years that you would like to work with?
Yeah, I think, you know, probably a lot of guys today or a lot of junior heavyweights have hold Dynamite Kid very high as far as a great wrestler. And I think I would really love to have, you know, opportunity to wrestle him with everything that he's done and, you know, for guys like us. And I think he helped pave the way for so many guys today, and especially Ring of Honor type guys and that type of style that I really like to wrestle him.
Okay. Next one, in no specific company, if you could do one thing in your career, what would it be?
One thing in my career, what would it be? That's really quite the broad question, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very broad.
Yeah, we left it very open-ended for you.
Yeah, one thing that you want to do.
I guess, yeah, before you retire, almost like your wrestling bucket list, I guess. The one thing, you know, you really would love to accomplish. If there's no boundaries on where you could go.
Jeez.
It's okay. You could say win the Rumble, don't we all?
Yeah. Help. Let's see. What would my... man. I will say... help bring Ring of Honor to the level of a WrestleMania main event that show. How about that?
I think that's a good one.
That's an awesome one.
There you go.
All right, here's an interesting one. Now, we've already asked what, you know, if you thought a certain match was the best, you know, turning point for your career, but do you feel like cutting your dreadlocks was one of the best moves of your career?
You know, unfortunately, it seems that a lot of fans think that way, but over time, I've grown to miss them.
Yes.
I mean, apparently, I guess it worked, because soon after I cut them, all of a sudden, I had some more chances, so I just went with it. But every once in a while, you know, I miss them. I'll see Christian York with his dreadlocks, and I will be jealous. So every once in a while, I miss them, but I guess it was a good career move.
If you weren't a wrestler, what would your job of choice be and why? Or does it not even exist?
My family, there's quite a few people in my family that are involved in, you know, law enforcement and government stuff. I would probably get into something like that just because it's, you know, seems interesting to me and they seem to enjoy it. So I guess along those lines.
Okay. What was the toughest obstacle you've had to overcome to make you who you are today?
Probably breaking my elbow. That's definitely up there. And I think it definitely helped, you know, my career as far as me mentally and to my persona and fans, what they think of me. I think that's definitely one of the top things. I can't think of anything else right now.
All right, we only got a couple more here. Mm-hmm. Do you believe Kenta, when he claimed CM Punk stole his moveset? this guy's just curious if, you know, you guys talk about stuff like that, or is that just kind of, you know, smack talk, basically?
Oh, yeah, as far as I know, Kenta had done it first, so whatever. I guess that means it's stolen, I don't know, but as far as I know, Kenta created that move, and I guess that's the answer.
All right, and the final listener question is, what is the best rib someone's ever pulled on you or that you've pulled on someone?
I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Office. I heard there's an Office quote at the beginning of the entrance.
Yes, so, very familiar, yep.
I'm sure you recall when Jim throws Ed Helms' cell phone in the ceiling when it keeps ringing. Well, I was able to do that to one of the guys in England, and I was very happy with the way it turned out.
Did he punch a hole through the wall like Ed Helms did?
Unfortunately not. We just, you know, I threw it up there and kept calling it, and he's walking around, where is my phone? Where's my phone? So I was very happy with the way that one turned out.
I can only hope it was him singing the same song.
I really wish it was. Unfortunately, it wasn't. I really wish, though.
All right, and Scott, I think you said you had a question before.
Yeah, my question absolutely actually has nothing to do with wrestling. Obviously, Eddie, you're from Massachusetts. What part are you from?
I'm originally from Peabody. I live up in Ipswich now.
Peabody. All right. So you obviously are a big Boston Bruins fan, I would take it.
Of course.
And,
of course.
Well, I am as well, as is Justin, and we're all ridiculously stoked that after 39 years, the black and gold can hoist the cup. So that might be, is that 1A, or is that tied with you winning the Ring of Honor world title as the greatest moment of the year for you?
Oh, the year. Well, yeah, that's definitely 1A. Yeah. One and one. I'll say two. I'll put that at two, okay. And I'll let the Ring of Honor belt take number one.
All right.
Completely.
Good. Who's your favorite?
Because Todd Sinclair will try to say that I'm a bandwagon fan, and then we will fight. So,
who's your favorite Bruin as a kid?
As a kid, Cam Neely. He's around that era, of course.
Yes, Cam and Ray. Of course.
Yeah, exactly. But then, unfortunately, Ray had to go somewhere else to win cup, but yeah. We won't bring that up right now.
Yeah, you know, some people are weird about that. I the Bruins, when they traded him in 99, were pretty hideous, so I understood the move, and he did bring the cup back on his day, you know, because they pass the cup off from one teammate to another, and when he had his day with it, he brought it back to Boston to, a lot of people think he was rubbing the city's nose in it, which I thought was...
I think it just made the Bruins or Boston look more pathetic. Like, hey, here comes the Avalanche. Yay! You know, whatever.
So now, just to tweak it a little bit, as a Yankee fan, Eddie, how do you feel about sports radio and the media obsessing over this David Ortiz not playing in the interleague play thing, and then they finally play him, and they don't even score other than John Lackey tonight?
All day, Lackey's a curse anyway, but all day long, the past few weeks, it's all they talk about.
Ridiculous.
I'm like, I don't just do it. I don't really care either way. If Adrian Gonzalez really hurts himself in the outfield, what's wrong with him? Come on. Are you really going to hurt yourself?
And they finally do it tonight, and they only score one run, and that was on a John Lackey double.
Yeah, a Lackey double. And I tried to say, come on, you got to put him in right field. That's where the fat, slow kids would play in Little League. And I would know because I was one of them. So it's really not that hard of a position to play.
That's where Scott plays in softball.
Oh, God, thanks. I got to call that my pitch, by the way. Thank you very much. You're the one that catches. So,
we're a loaded team.
What are we talking about?
So, anyway, Eddie, one last question here, just for our Place to Be Nation. Scott is a big, big fan of Hacksaw Jim Duggan growing up. What's your thoughts on Hacksaw Jim Duggan as a wrestler?
He is a great, great sports entertainer.
Okay.
Thank you. That's a great answer.
Scott actually despises poor Jim Duggan.
I absolutely hate the guy so much. I'd like you to put him in your diehard finisher and not let it go ever. or hit him with a ladder.
He still goes to shows and has everybody yelling ho. So
No matter what country he's in, he gets them to chant USA, too.
He's doing something right.
All right, Eddie. So before we wrap up, is there anything specific you wanted to get out there? Any plugs?
I mean, you know, people want to check out my website, e-edwards.net. You know, I have all my upcoming dates and merchandise stuff and videos, like you said. And of course, ROHWrestling.com. Check out the dates for them and what we got going on. Just stay connected and keep in touch with everything that's going on. Some big happenings.
And you're on Facebook and Twitter as well, right?
I am on Facebook. My webmaster who runs my website does that, the Facebook, and I did recently just join Twitter, building up to our match at Best in the World. I've been slacking the last few days just out of depression, but I will get back on it.
Well, you're going to see a million things from me plugging this interview. So,
yes.
And also, I do want to push you fans to go check out Eddie's website, because it's definitely one of the more detailed wrestler kind of fan sites I've seen, just as far as information and content goes. And I can definitely say, I don't know how the match would go, but you'd definitely beat John in that area. His website.
I mean, he'd rather live in the mountains, left alone by everybody, so of course I'll be doing that.
Although Justin would be his manager and probably turn on him, and he'd be your manager, so that's probably what would happen. So
that works.
All right, Eddie, we want to thank you so much for joining us. This is a lot of fun, really. Thank you. Good luck in the future, and we hope to have you back on maybe later in the year or next year sometime.
Yeah, well, thank you guys anytime. You know, let me know, and we'll hook it up and do it again.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thank you, Eddie.
Thanks, guys.
Well, there he is, the former Ring of Honor heavyweight. We were hoping we could say Ring of Honor heavyweight champion.
Nah, we still can. He's the real champion.
Yes, that is true. That is true. That is it for the Place to Be podcast. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I hope everyone enjoyed Eddie Edwards, and we wish him luck down the road. I hope all of you listeners enjoyed the answers to your questions that you gave us.
Yes, thank you for bringing those out as well. They helped us make this interview even better.
You had to mention Jim Duggan, even to him. what did he give you a check? I mean, come on.
The people demand it.
Well, we're getting one of our loyal Place to Be podcast listeners is starting an anti-Jim Duggan coalition with me, so we're going to keep this going, damn it.
Well, you're both clowns.
So, so that's our two for this week. Of course, Monday we did, not Monday, Sunday, we did SummerSlam 90. So next week, what do we got next week? Next week,
we have a little headline show because we have to, you know, we get into the Punk stuff tonight with Eddie Edwards, but we want to get into that further and kind of, you know, preview the pay-per-view a little bit. And then also later in the week, we'll be doing Survivor Series 90. So.
Yes, and actually a special, it's a special edition of the Vintage Vault that night, and you'll have to wait to find out why it is a special special edition. I have our closing theme here. Let's see. All right, so for Justin Rosero, I am Scott Criscola. It is the Place to Be podcast. Have a great night. We'll talk to you next week.
Later.